The House will come to order. Please stand. The flag salute will be led by Representative Olson.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our opening ceremony this morning will be presented by Matthew Hasek from Albany. He is going to be doing a reading for us. He is the guest of Representative Gelser. And you also know, colleagues, on your desk is a copy of his remarks for your reference. Welcome, Matthew.
I feel very honored to be speaking to this distinguished group. As we come together, we would ask that each of us to find the strength to put aside our differences. Together, we need to focus on the pressing issues facing our great state of Oregon. May we have the wisdom and the foresight to put into constructive action legislation that will have a long and wide-ranging impact on the people that each of you represent. Years ago, these words were stated. Of the people, by the people, and for the people. These powerful words can help us today. Together, we can make Oregon a leader in this great nation that we all honor, regardless of your political affiliation. We need to believe together we can face the massive challenges facing us today. Yes, we can. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matthew. It's an honor to have you address us today. Enjoy your rest of the day at the Capitol. Courtesies. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please join me in welcoming Matthew, who just offered us our opening ceremony today. I first met Matthew because he is an ambassador for the Linn County Democratic Party. He also serves in the 5th Congressional CD Committee. Matthew is also very involved in the community, volunteering with the Albany Police Department and also Mothers Against Drunk Driving. He is a member of the Albany Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. And now, hold on, because I am a beaver. However, Matthew holds a bachelor's degree in political science and history from the University of Oregon. On occasion, I do honor ducks. Welcome to the Capitol today. And with Matthew today is also Lloyd Hinion, who is the chair of the Linn County Democratic Party. Thank you, and welcome to your House of Representatives today.
Welcome. Let us proceed with our moment in Oregon history today, honoring the sesquicentennial. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This sesquicentennial history minute is from the Oregon Historical Society's online educational resources, the Oregon History Project, and Oregon Time Web. It relates to Oregon City. Oregon City, located on the banks of the Willamette River near Willamette Falls, was incorporated in 1844, the first official city established west of the Rocky Mountains and the last stop on the Oregon Trail. In 1846, John McLaughlin, called the Father of Oregon for his assistance to early American settlers, retired as the chief factor of the Hudson's Bay Company's Columbia Department and settled with his wife Marguerite and their family in Oregon City. He built a commercial grist mill that was powered by the falls and was elected mayor of Oregon City in 1851. American settlers and businessmen were attracted to Oregon City, which served as the capital of the Oregon Territory from 1849 to 1852. It was the territory's largest settlement until the 1850s, when Portland assumed that status because of its advantageous site at the confluence of the Willamette and Columbia Rivers. During the earliest days of Oregon's river transportation network, steamboat companies portaged people and goods around the 40-foot-high Willamette Falls on a primitive road and wooden rail system. The Portage Railroad was built in the 1860s. After the Willamette Falls locks were completed in 1873, steamboats were able to travel past Oregon City without portaging. They were the first locks built in Oregon and are still operating under the direction of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. During the 20th century, much of Oregon City's economy was powered by the forest industry, mills, and shipping. Clackamas Community College opened in 1968, attracting students from throughout the region, and over 25,000 people live in Oregon City today. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Let's do further courtesies. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please welcome four honorary pages today. In fact, the entire group is from Estacada Middle School, but only four of them today do I have the privilege to introduce. I already warned you, I'm going to embarrass you one by one if you'd stand up when I call your name. Brittany Hall. Brittany is active in student council, plays basketball and volleyball, also is in band, and she aspires to be a designer someday. Her twin sister, Amanda, is also here today. Interestingly enough, Amanda is also involved in student council, plays basketball, volleyball, involved with band. Amanda, however, aspires to be a doctor. Emma Kirchhofer is also in student council and volunteers for the food bank, plays basketball, volleyball, and loves to read. She aspires to be an architect. And also, Brendan Delmonico is involved in student council and interested in politics. And colleagues, when it listed his career goals, Brendan, quote, wants to, and I quote, to be a politician. And I'm very confident that none of us in our behavior today will disabuse him of this aspiration. Colleagues, please welcome them.
Further courtesies, Representative Van Orman.
Mr. Speaker, I too have students representing District 52 from Estacada. I have today visiting us Andrea Bungney from the junior high. She's eighth grader. She's age 13. She's interested in science, reading, soccer, and in the TAG program, and she wants to be a computer scientist. Next, I have Mackenzie Gipple, and Mackenzie's 13. She too is at Estacada Junior High, and she's in grade 7, and she's interested in volleyball and basketball, and as a basketball family, we're pretty excited about that. Softball, she's on student council, and she's also interested in art and she wants to grow up to be a doctor or a surgeon. Our next page today is Sierra Lacari. She's 13. She's in grade 7 at Estacada Junior High. She likes camping, spending time with her family, and volleyball. And she wants to grow up to be a lawyer. Sarah Remplos, age 13, Estacada Junior High, 7th grade. She's interested in basketball, volleyball. She's on student council, and she's in tag. And she's interested in being a musician. Courtney Schmidt, age 12, 7th grade, is interested in basketball, volleyball, Girl Scouts, student council, in the tag program, and she has a 4-point GPA. And she's going to be a prosecutor. Thank you for coming today.
Further courtesies, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps at another time, Mr. Speaker, we can have the Secretary of State come in and explain to these young people why we have three representatives representing Estacada. But I'm glad to have my piece of Estacada, and I'd like to introduce three honorary pages. First, Bethany Wiles. Bethany is from Eagle Creek, attending Estacada Junior High. She loves camping, reading, track, and the violin, and she wants to be a doctor. So welcome, Bethany. Next, we have Benton Wilbur. Benton loves a real man sport, basketball. He's also in tag, and he aspires to be an ESPN reporter, which proves we do get cable in our district. Thank you for being here, Benton. And lastly, I want to introduce Austin Eaton. Austin, also from Estacada, is interested in science, baseball, soccer, and also in the tag program, which is, as far as I know, a part of Fish and Wildlife. And Austin would like to be an engineer. Welcome.
We welcome all of our pages today. Thanks for serving us and the House of Representatives. Enjoy your day. Further courtesies, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today I want to recognize some people in the gallery who are helping make a real difference in our community, in their communities. They're community health directors and members of the Oregon Primary Care Association. These community health clinics provide high-quality, evidence-based primary and preventative care for almost 300,000 Oregonians in both rural and urban Oregon. Last year, they provided over 1 million visits with coordinated integrated health care. They're pioneering the health care reform effort that is sweeping the country. Making a model for that provides better health outcomes, and especially for those with chronic diseases, and demonstrating that to help hold down cost increases for our health system. So today, clinics that are here include Benton Community Health Center in Corvallis, Central City Concern in Portland, Columbia River Health Services of Boardman, Coastal Family of Astoria, and my personal friend, Jim Coffey, Klamath Health Partnership of Klamath Falls, La Clinica of Medford, Central Point, Multnomah County Health Department's Primary Care Clinics, Siskiyou Health Care Center in Grants Pass, Cave Junction, and Wolf Creek, the Reinhardt Clinic in my district, which is in Wheeler, Northwest Health Services in Salem, Native American Rehabilitation Association in Portland, outside in of Portland, Umpqua in Roseburg, Virginia Garcia in Beaverton, Cornelius, Hillsborough, and McMinnville. Many other clinics operate in places like Lebanon, Bend, Prineville, Madras, Ontario, Hood River, and the Dalles. So as you can see, these clinics serve our constituents throughout our state. Let's welcome these healthcare champions from our safety net to the Capitol. Welcome.
Welcome to your house. Enjoy your day in the Capitol. Further courtesies, Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. On the side aisle here, I have a constituent of mine. His name is Stephen Sharp. Stephen, come on up to the side aisle. Stephen is from Cove, and he's here today and tomorrow over the next couple days, hopefully to introduce himself to many of you and Tomorrow he's going to be sharing some thoughts in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Stephen's an amazing guy. In the summer of 1992, when he was 17 years old, he was doing some farm work between high school years during the summer. When the power takeoff unit of the 22-year-old tractor he was operating self-engaged while he was unclogging the hay baler it was attached to. The baler started operating and caught him by both of his arms. After a 45-minute struggle, he finally freed himself, leaving both of his arms behind in its mechanism. He managed to make his way to the nearest farmhouse, which was over a quarter of a mile away, where he collapsed on the front porch. But I have to tell you, through his determination and his persistence and that good old Eastern Oregon work ethic, he's put his life back together, and now he owns and operates his own ranch. Obviously, with the assistance of some family, he's operating a successful operation. Colleagues, would you please extend courtesies today to Stephen Sharp and hopefully welcome him into your office over the next day or so.
Welcome to your house. Further courtesies, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to direct your attention to the front of the room and this fine-looking group of pages, and not a single one is mine today. I've cornered the market on pages this session. However, because I was lonely, I brought some of my city leaders. Up here in the gallery, they're going to stand so you can see all of them. I have Ginger Griffith, James Hansen, Craig Fentiman, Kathy Nelson, Craig Martin, and Jim Bradley. Some of these folks have traveled from Detroit and Sweet Home, Waterloo, Lyons, and please welcome them to the House.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today you're going to see about 40 people from our chamber. They have not arrived yet. The bus is a little late. But when you see them, please give them a warm welcome, as our chamber of Medford and Jackson County has over 1,500 large and small businesses that they represent and they advocate for. So when you see them, extend a fine, hearty welcome.
Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to invite my colleagues to extend a welcome to two of my best friends in the whole world who are up in the side aisle, and will wave at you up in the side gallery. It's Dr. Don Freeborn and Dr. Clyde Pope, who had the misfortune of working for a combined total of 60 years with me, and they would typically periodically flip a coin and the loser would become my deputy. They're among the best health service researchers in the country, both now retired, and they have time to visit the People's House for the first time. So as you see them hanging around with me or with Harriet today, please extend their welcome to them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Quite a day for colleagues to introduce folks that they know. And though I cannot see them, I do have the distinct pleasure of introducing students from Latham Elementary School, and I believe they are up here above us. They are from Cottage Grove. Latham Elementary is the oldest public school in the South Lane School District, originally built as a one-room schoolhouse in 1867 at the north end of the current Weyerhaeuser property on Highway 99 South. A new two-room school was built in 1922 and then moved in 1942 to its present location south of town. Colleagues, please welcome these fine students from Latham Elementary.
Welcome to you all. Enjoy your day in the Capitol. Any further courtesies? The clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying a quorum. Representative Beyer is there. All members are present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform that the Senate has passed Senate Bills 140, 188, 205, 367, 395, 394, and 409.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
HJM 10, urging Congress to amend Section 529 of Internal Revenue Code to allow accounts in qualified tuition programs to be used for repayment of student loans. HR 3, expressing approval and support of forest resource management plans developed under Western Oregon Plan revisions and urging Governor to facilitate speedy implementation of management plans.
Measures read for the first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills. And colleagues, I would remind us, all the bills that we all introduced through 5 p.m. yesterday, the list today that Obi will read is just the first cut of those. We'll be absorbing those as first readings for several days, processing them as quickly as possible. Obi, lead on.
House Bill 2859 related to groundwater use for domestic purposes. House Bill 2860 related to termination of parental rights. House Bill 2861 related to charge imposed by State Forestry Department. House Bill 2862 related to medical assistance for recipients of Social Security disability benefits. House Bill 2863 relating to agricultural zones. House Bill 2864 relating to land use planning for land included within urban growth boundary. House Bill 2865 relating to system development charges. House Bill 2866 relating to expedited process for public sector collective bargaining. House Bill 2867 relating to public contracting and declaring emergency. House Bill 2868 relating to child care facilities. House Bill 2869 relating to interpreter services and workers' compensation claims. House Bill 2871 relating to reinstatement fee. House Bill 2872 relating to unlawful possession of a firearm. House Bill 2875 relating to annexation. House Bill 2876 relating to civic literacy in Oregon University System. House Bill 2877 relating to budget levels for Type B area agencies. House Bill 2878 relating to reductions in funding of health services. House Bill 2880 relating to jobs creation strategies, commission appropriate money, and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2881 relating to medical marijuana. House Bill 2882 relating to use of land zone for exclusive farm use. House Bill 2883 relating to protective proceedings, task force appropriate money, and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2884 relating to motor carrier enforcement. House Bill 2885 relating to vehicle taxes and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority. House Bill 2886 relating to low-profit limited liability companies. House Bill 2887 relating to medical assistance for adult recipients of Social Security disability benefits. House Bill 2888 relating to easement owner obligations. House Bill 2889 relating to payment for health care services. House Bill 2890 relating to classification of employees and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2891 relating to railroad worker camps. House Bill 2892 relating to railroads. House Bill 2893 relating to olive oil. House Bill 2894 relating to grandparents and juvenile dependency proceedings. House Bill 2895 relating to state measures and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2896 relating to hydrogen power. House Bill 2897 relating to placement of children in protective custody. House Bill 2898 relating to agricultural building. House Bill 2899 relating to waiver from the Federal Unemployment Insurance Program. House Bill 2900 relating to reserve fund and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2901 relating to group registration plates. House Bill 2902 relating to financing for transportation projects, property money, and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2903 relating to employment agreements. House Bill 2905 relating to community action agency network of property money, declaring an emergency. House Bill 2906 relating to study by the Department of Transportation to appropriate money and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2907 relating to interstate agreements concerning prevailing rates of wages and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2908 relating to prevailing wage education enforcement account and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2911 relating to the disposition of property subject to a self-service storage facility lien. House Bill 3000 relating to autism spectrum disorder. House Bill 3022 relating to treatment of sexually transmitted diseases.
Bills read for the first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2235 relating to hazardous trees along state highways. House Bill 2302 relating to local correctional expenses. House Bill 2326 relating to motor vehicle liability coverage.
Bills read for the second time or passed a third reading. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill on a short summary.
House Bill 2166 relating to State Forester. Direct State Forester to serve as Governor's authorized representative for fire management assistance grants.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2166. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Barker votes aye. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. Representative Thompson, how do you vote? Thompson votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. House Bill 2166, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
House Bill 2176, relating to Advisory Committee that advises Director of Veterans Affairs, modifies qualifications required for appointment to Advisory Committee that advises Director of Veterans Affairs.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2176. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes aye. Representative Buckley, how do you vote? Buckley votes aye. House Bill 2176, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2039, relating to unlawfully parked vehicles.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2039A. Representative Kenemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2039A in gross comes from your Committee on Business and Labor. And it's an interesting piece in that back in 1995, when I chaired the Business Committee in the Senate, we found there was a problem with rental cars often being parked in public parking spaces, and the people didn't pay their fines. And in Portland, actually, there were tens of thousands of dollars in fines. And we worked out a compromise and worked out a bill, and it might be worth a visit, but probably not on the floor, about how that went. And there was a bill passed that allowed rental cars to not be responsible for the fines by their renters. This does the same thing, only it extends it now to private parking facilities. So when someone rents a car and parks it illegally in a private facility, they use very much the same process that we use when you have a car that has been sold or something, and or you're not driving the car when there is a violation picked up on photo radar. And all the rental company does is they need to submit information to the parking garage that they were not in possession of the car, it was rented, and then they're no longer liable. I think it's a very responsible way to solve this problem. People who commit the offense should be the people who are responsible for it. It comes to you unanimously from your Committee on Business and Labor. I urge an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, what this bill says is if you rent a car, you can park anywhere you want, don't worry about it. You don't have to pay any penalty. It's free parking with a rental car. And I don't think that was the intent. Car rentals are almost always done with a credit card. The company gets the ticket. If you don't tell them about it and skip out, they could just hit you again on the credit card. These penalties, people violating the parking law should pay their fines. They also shouldn't be clogging up, like, for instance, parking in downtown Portland at timed meters where they need merchants need a turnover of cars in order to keep their business going. This takes it all off the table. All the renter has to do is go away. Yes, the rental company can tell the state who got the parking ticket, but we don't bring felons back from out of state in most cases. We're certainly not going to spend a lot of time trying to get a parking ticket paid. The owner of the car is responsible. If I loan my car to you and you get a parking ticket, I can't say, oh, I loaned it to somebody. I'll have to pay that. The rental company should be held to the same standard as the individuals. A no vote would be appropriate on this bill. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kennenberg, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I think it's an interesting problem that sometimes people, when they do things, are irresponsible. Sometimes they're just careless. But the simple fact is that the rental company can't be responsible for the misconduct of another. That's why they also insist that you have insurance when you rent the car. And part of this bill does provide that the name and address of that individual is transferred to the garage. So it's not just saying you're out of luck. It's that you need to ask the appropriate person to pay the fine. I don't think most of us expect other people to pay fines that we incur or vice versa. I think this is a very appropriate bill, and I do urge an aye vote. Thank you very much.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Kotek votes aye. Representative Nolan votes no. House Bill 2039A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2050, relating to non-related foster parent caregiver relationships and juvenile dependency proceedings.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2050. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2050 extends the time to establish a caregiver relationship between a juvenile and an unrelated foster parent from 6 to 12 months. The genesis of this bill is a result of a very painful and divisive adoption case. Historically, the time to establish the legal threshold for a caregiver relationship has changed from 30 months down to the current time of 6 months. Frankly, the legislature probably overreached in this case, and moving back to 12 months appears to be the right move. Ultimately, I'm not convinced that we will ever hit the sweet spot because circumstances vary from case to case. Even though I have my reservations that this body could never find the perfect fix, I urge your support of House Bill 2050. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As you heard, this bill came about as a result of a second look at the policy and the consequences of allowing caregiver relationship to exist after 6 months or have intervener status. And as you know, we actually changed that relationship in 2005 from 6 to 12 months. And after that time, we had two sensitive review committees where we dealt with this issue, and we had to take a second look, which we did. And then last session, in House Bill 414, it required the DHS to make a diligent effort to relocate relatives. This was a change from reasonable effort. This diligent effort, in fact, can take more time, and the agency needs time to locate those relatives, and oftentimes it's beyond 6 months. Also, we're finding out that the recovery of parents and they're meeting the DH requirements to have their children return often takes more than 6 months through the recovery programs, drug, alcohol, those types of things. And the bill simply will require a foster parent to have been providing care for 12 consecutive months before gaining that caregiver status or intervener status. It's a good bill, and I urge your aye support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Maurer, do you wish to close?
No, Mr. Speaker.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Cannon votes aye. House Bill 2050, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2133, relating to fees charged for tests performed by State Public Health Laboratory.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2133. Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill removes the current cap on fees that the State Public Health Laboratory is enabled to charge for those fees. It does not directly raise fees. It puts the setting of the fees in the hands of Department of Administrative Services. If it is not approved, some tests that are of real public health significance will not be offered because currently we are not recovering adequate costs to keep delivering them. It came out of committee with strong support, and I would urge your support. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to,
To the bill, please.
I'd like to support Representative Harker's statements on House Bill 2133. We ask our state agencies to behave like businesses. And what's happening now in the state laboratory is they're forced into a fee schedule that has them losing money on some of the tests. That model doesn't work well. They try to make it up in volume, but that doesn't work. All we're asking here is that they be allowed to have a process to raise fees on specific tests to the cost of doing that test. It was unopposed in committee. I say the Hospital Association, that'll pick up a piece of it, and it just literally makes sense to give them this authority under rulemaking, working with DAS, and I too urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Some folks in this body may be concerned that we're just allowing an agency to create a fee structure all on its own. But I want to reflect the comments of both the previous speakers that this is about allowing a very great piece of our public health structure to retrieve costs for services that they are providing. The last time they went for an increase for communicable disease testing was in April of 1998. Things have changed a lot. Last time they asked for a fee increase for screening of newborns was in October of 2002 when they expanded their testing from 6 disorders to 40 disorders. But beyond the cost, it's not an agency, but this department provides a very valuable public health service. They are available 24/7, 365 to provide emergency services to hospitals and public health departments. They've been very responsible in the past, and all they're asking for is cost of doing business. And I'd urge your support. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Of course, he does.
Thank you. It's been my experience that agencies come to the legislature and request a fee increase, and then the legislature approves or doesn't approve. And it's mostly for recouping their cost of doing business, just like the good representative just said. And I'm wondering, why are we doing this differently and allowing an agency or department, in this case, to decide what their fees might be?
I think, to continue with the business motif laid out here before, that we're trying to, the intent is to make it a more efficient process, so that they don't have to come back and raise some of the fees statutorily as was done in the 2001 session.
Okay.
Or the cap was raised then, I'm sorry.
Representative Thatcher?
To the bill. I just question if we're doing it here in this instance, I'm wondering if that's going to be the movement for all other departments and agencies, or I don't expect you to answer that. That's why I didn't ask you another question, but it just seems odd that we would just decide that in this case it's a special situation. All other agencies and departments also have costs of doing business, and we also want to make sure that they get those funds covered or find a more efficient way of delivery, whatever it is that we have in those discussions. It just seems like an odd practice, though I support what they do. I just question the method that we're just kind of abdicating our responsibility here, I think. So anyway, I haven't decided yet on the bill, but thanks.
Further discussion, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Good representative, not to belabor this point, but I think that you've tapped into some angst all of us are feeling. Was there any discussion in committee about a report back on this new fee structure to, like, the next legislative assembly?
Mr. Speaker? To directly address the question, I do not recall such conversation. It might be that that would be desirable. We did discuss whether this would be a revenue-generating change for the department. It was not. There was perhaps, if any of the other members of the committee remember this differently than I do, please chime in.
Thank you. To the bill.
Representative Berger, to the bill.
Yes, colleagues, I think we all share a certain angst here about just authorizing this fee increase without knowing where it's going. And I think we're all aware, as we go out into our districts, that the cost of health care to everybody is a huge issue. And by just sort of lifting the lid, are we just lifting the lids to the cost of health care to our constituents without any feedback as to why and how we are going to contain this? I will probably support this bill, but I can guarantee you that I am going to be going to my good senators and recommending that a report back on what this fee structure is would be something that I would like to see added in the Senate. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Harker, do you wish to close?
Yeah, I do. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think I sense the angst. It's hard to be immune to it these days. But what we are trying to do is give the laboratory the ability to recover costs. I don't believe we're going to be generating additional profits. I don't believe that this is going to lead to the escalation of healthcare costs. I believe this is simply going to enable the state public health laboratory to deliver services that are needed. And I would once again urge your support. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 2133, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2206, relating to child care.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2206. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise today to talk about House Bill 26, which is a fix for our child care system of regulation and monitoring child care providers. We have two processes in the child care system. One is for those people employed in child care, or as an example, me as a Head Start director, we all had to be registered in the criminal history registry to work with children. The second is the employment department is responsible for licensing and regulating people and facilities that provide child care. A problem has developed because of the following loophole. Currently, a child care provider who has lost their license or been removed from the criminal history registry for cause will still be able to care for up to three unrelated children or to operate a preschool for 4 hours or less per day. This bill would close that loophole. It was passed unanimously out of committee and will prevent child care providers who have had their licenses denied, suspended, revoked, or voluntarily surrendered in lieu of legal action, or have been denied, suspended, or removed from the criminal history registry for cause from providing child care or operating a preschool. Our child care laws should, above all else, protect the welfare of our children, and this bill would help to improve these protections to make sure that all child care providers are properly screened and licensed.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Van Orman, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Barker votes aye. House Bill 2206, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2362, relating to student assessment and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2362. Representative Kamp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2362 comes to you from the House Education Committee. And if you have read the bill summary, then now there is going to be a test to see if you understand it. And the test is, if you understand differentiated instruction, you will know why this is important. This is a teaching tool, a learning tool for students, teachers, and parents. This is not a mandate. This is an option for districts to have the opportunity to use an assessment tool to actually find out what is the student's current level in reading, math, science, and writing. When the teacher knows those accurate levels, they are even given the opportunity to have a breakdown of the skills that the student might need to have reinforced, enhanced, or that he has met and is moving on to the next step. This is a bill to help students know what they need to learn and parents to know where their students are at. It is a great tool for talented and gifted, the everyday student, the student in special needs to help them be more successful. Colleagues, this passed the House Committee on a 10-0 vote, and we would appreciate your support.
Further discussion, Representative Berger.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Good, Representative. I see on this bill there is no fiscal, so I assume the Department of Education already has this information. It is not a new assessment that they are to develop. It's simply to make it available. Am I correct in that?
Good, Representative. Yes. They do not have the information. They will contract with a current provider that's here in Oregon that has been doing these assessments. And there is a mutual agreement about sharing those tools.
Further question, Mr. Carrier?
Further question, does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
So that is why there is no fiscal impact for the state on this bill?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Berger?
No further questions. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good representative.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Comp, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. House Bill 2362, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2427, relating to implied consent.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2427. Representative Barton.
Thank you.
you, Mr. Speaker. And colleagues, I would like to assure you that I do not plan to speak for 9.5 minutes on this bill. Under current law, a person can be charged with a traffic offense and punishable by $500 to $1,000 if they refuse to take a breath test and there's probable cause to suspect that they're drunk driving. However, a refusal to submit to a blood or urine test is not included under the current law, thereby creating an incentive in certain cases, particularly in other intoxicants such as marijuana and other drugs, to refuse to comply with the test. This bill, HB 2427, corrects that omission. It's a good vote. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barton, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. House Bill 2427, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2462, relating to the reporting of pesticide use for veterinary purposes.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2462. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When we passed and then began to pay for the pesticide use reporting system, one of those, which I believe unintended consequences, was that it encompassed veterinarians in their practice of applying pesticides like Frontline on the back neck of animals and giving them certain pills that are considered herbicides and pesticides. They also, from time to time, go out to a farm to apply pesticides to hooves and to the back of animals. In each case, the pesticide is absorbed into the body of the animal that's being treated to take care of a particular disease. But because of the all-encompassing pesticide use reporting bill, those veterinarians have to keep track of each of those applications and then file annually at the end of January with the pesticide use reporting those pesticides used. It makes little sense to me in the scope of what we're trying to do with pesticide use reporting that we have our veterinarians who have found multiple difficulties with getting that report filed and sent electronically in their practice, and when they sell it to someone, there is no reporting for them. It is important, as we heard testimony, that they demonstrate and show the owners of these animals how to apply and take care of for its best use so that it doesn't get into the environment. But when they do that, they are forced to sign to fill out a pesticide use reporting bill. It is my contention that when we find out these kinds of problems, if we don't take care of them, then they fester and become the reason that we do away with generally good programs. I look at land use and others. Once we set it in place, we weren't willing to go back and look at it at all. That led to unrest amongst many of our citizens, which led to ballot measures and our work last session. Here, what I'm trying to do before those kinds of things happen, because I think pesticide use reporting can be very important for us, is take care of those little things to show people that we are listening and taking information from constituents to make it better. That's really what this bill does. I encourage your support. Thank you very much.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. House Bill 2462, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent that consideration of H.J.R. 15 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Thursday, March 5th, 2009's calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 140 relating to real estate licenses. Senate Bill 188 relating to penalties imposed for violations of food safety laws. Senate Bill 205 relating to construction contractors. Senate Bill 367 relating to Thomas Paine. Senate Bill 394 relating to property tax rule and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 395 relating to personal property tax delinquency warrants and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 409 relating to blackberries and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Announcements. Anyone? Remonstrances. Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is to address the tone here on the floor, and I generally feel very welcome over here, but today I have had the sense that there's someone burning holes in the back of my head. Looking at the voting record, I can't base it on the slightly contentious bill that I carried, so I can only suggest that the good representative from West Lynn is concerned about a certain high school basketball game that's going to occur this evening between Sunset High School from my district and West Lynn High School from his. They do have the home court advantage, but we are bringing a team with my son and the Metro League Player of the Week, Michael Holton. So I'm sure the timbre on the floor will improve over the next couple of days, regardless of the outcome of this evening. Thank you.
Counterpoint, Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know all that great, eloquent talk we've had all session long about bipartisanship? It's gone. Go Lions.
Further remonstrances. Adjournment. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Wednesday, March 4th, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Wednesday, March 4th, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourned.